Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Wednesday edition of Sports Conversation. I'm Don Menders. We got great guests all around the country to talk about the world of sports tonight. Always look forward to the Wednesday nights and the conversation, what's happening in all the sports. And we try to cover each and every one as we go along. We have a great list of people that work with us. And but before we get to those people, and Roy Cummings always starts us off, and we'll go to him in just a second. But Frank's got a dedication he'd like to make our executive producer. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, we want to send our deepest sympathies out to the people who are working on the bridge at the Francis Scott Key Bridge and their families. It was a horrible problem that was created. And also especially for, there's a young 31-year-old New York cop that's just made a simple traffic stop as he walked up to the car. Two guys opened fire on him and killed him. He's a father of two, 31 years old and married, Mike Hardren. And we want to wish all our brothers in blue up there a successful trial and these scumbags and put them away.
Amen.
Amen is right. Well, let's go down and chat a little bit. Roy Cummings, as always, always leads off the program, and he's ready to talk about the Lightning. He's ready to talk about what's happening with the Bucks, what's happening with the Rays. Everything happens down there in Tampa. So, Roy, let's start off with, I hate to do it, let's start off with football, because they always find a way to get into the news of the day. First of all, I know Roger will have a comment or two about the opening of the National Football League season. It'll happen not in Philadelphia, but in Venezuela. And I'll tell you, it's amazing to me. NFL Week 1, Game 1, will be, I'm sorry, in Brazil, not Venezuela.
Brazil.
It'll be in Paulo, Brazil. And it will be, of all things, it will be on home TV. No, it will not be on home TV. So you're going to have a chance on September the 6th to buy it and see the game, but not on your local TV station. So,
that's
Roger,
right.
I'll let you talk about that one first.
Well, I read that today. It's going to be on Peacock, and you're going to have to pay for it to see the opening game of the year. They still don't know who the Eagles are going to be playing, because that won't be announced until, I guess, in a couple of weeks when they announce the schedule. But it's just another indication of the money thuggery of the NFL owners. That's all I can say.
Excuse me for just a second. Roger, excuse me for just a second, because San Pablo, Brazil is where it's going to be. It's going to be the Eagles taking on the Miami Dolphins on September the 6th.
Oh, they announced it. Okay.
Yes.
They must have just announced that. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. They just were waiting for the schedule. So, but
Roy, any comment on that?
That's just the way it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I'm not a fan of it. Certainly for a season opener, it's a Friday night game, which is unique in itself. I'm not a fan of it being on Peacock, but you know what? The NFL tried this once before. They put a playoff game on Peacock. It wasn't a very good game, as it turns out, but that game drew 28 million viewers. And the largest viewing audience for a streamed sporting event ever, maybe any event ever. Maybe Taylor Swift, will beat it somehow. But right now, I mean, that just fuels the fire, you know, for the NFL to say, hey, we need to try this again and see what else we can get out of it. And it's kind of just – it's the way things are going. Look, there was a time when we probably weren't – so when some people weren't happy with NFL games going to cable network to cable networks because not everybody had cable. There was a time when not everybody was happy with NFL games being solely on the NFL network, which was, you know, even a deeper dive into cable. You couldn't get it with just basic cable. In some cases, that's a network that you have to pay extra for. You pay a premium for ESPN. So I'm not surprised that we're here, and it's probably going to keep on happening. You're probably going to see more of it rather than less going forward. And it's, you know, it's if you want to see that game, you're going to have to, you know, buy in for a free trial for the streaming service, or just, you know, pay the $10 or $5 or whatever it might be to have it long term, which, again, it's I don't think everybody's going to be happy about it. But if 28 million people bought in the first time around, it almost makes sense to give it a try again. And at some point, what you're going to have is you're going to have streaming services, whether it's Peacock, Hulu, Apple TV, take your pick, offering to, show games exclusively on their streaming networks. Look, ESPN's doing that with the NHL right now. There are some games that are only available through the ESPN Plus app or subscription service. And, been a couple of times when I've wanted to see a game the game hasn't been available, and I don't have ESPN Plus, and, you know, I missed it. It's unfortunate, but it's another step forward. It's really not any different than some of the steps we've taken previously and the evolution of televised, or now it's, streamed live sporting events.
Well, I got to agree, and one good thing about it is if you live in Philadelphia, you live in Miami, you get it over your normal channel, so you don't have to worry. It's the rest of the country that has to worry about whether they can get it on Peacock.
And you know what, Don? And, you know, excuse me for interrupting, Don, but that's a really important part of it. The local fans still get to watch the game on a network that's available to them as long as they, you know, have, you know, get all the channels. And that's important. So the NFL hasn't shut the local fans out. Now, if you're an Eagles fan in here in Tampa or an Eagles fan in Wyoming or out in California, you're going to have to get that streaming service if you want the game that badly. Same with the Dolphins and if you're out of the market. But, again, I do give credit to the NFL for not completely shutting out the local fans. I think that's important, and I'm glad you brought it up because I failed to. But you're right, and I think that's important.
My last eye on the National Football League before we go to the opening of the baseball season and some of the other things that are of major importance today in the world of sports. Roger, we'll again let you start with you. What do you think of the kickoff procedure for the National Football League?
Well, you know, they constantly are changing. I mean, they feel that it's going to add excitement, but yet also they don't want injuries. So, you know, but before I wanted to get to Roy and you, I wanted to give you some information about the NHL. Yesterday, and I was at a rally on Monday night, and I spoke to the chairman of the Forsyth County commissioners, and they approved the moving on of the gathering. Which is going to have an 18,500 seat facility in this big complex that's going to be the plan to be built in southern Forsyth County, almost at the North Fulton border. And I asked, of course, he couldn't tell me how he felt about it. He said, but the vote's tomorrow. Well, it passed. And that's the big deal because Roy, and I had told Don this, he had a meeting with Gary Bettman in New York. And I guess there's the big push. I don't know if it's going to be, of course, it'll take a few years to get this complex built. But I don't know whether it's going to be an expansion team or a team that's having some problems to move them here. But they really feel you know, with two teams in Florida, and you've got Nashville, and you've got Charlotte, this definitely is the place to be, and especially since it's not in downtown Atlanta. So I thought I'd bring that up to you while I'm thinking about it, because it just happened late yesterday.
All right, we'll come back to the National Hockey League in just a minute. Roy, just your observations before we switch gears on the new kickoff procedure.
Yeah, you know what? I'm anxious to see it, see how it works. I think it's interesting. Look, it's clearly this is all done in as a nod to player safety, and I think that makes a lot of sense. They've been trying to look. It's better than getting rid of the kickoff entirely. I don't have a problem with it. You know, that I didn't want to see. I think that's an important play to have. And you know, will it make it easier or harder for someone to run back a kickoff? We'll see. You know, most kickoffs are going into the end zone anyway, and they're touchbacks. Seldom does anybody really return one. If they are, it's designed to have it returned. You may see more of that. So maybe we see more plays. And they're going to revisit it after the first year, which is what the NFL, you know, typically does with new rules. And, look, this is a league where there's once a rule against throwing the ball down the field. So the league continues to evolve. And I don't have a problem with it. I think it's interesting. We'll see. And you know what? You're going to be able to – you'll still have the option for onside kicks in the fourth quarter. So, you know, we'll see how it works out. Again, before I really, you know, argue against it, I want to see it in action. And I appreciate the fact that the league is looking into some things that are, you know, a little out of the ordinary for the traditionalists. But at the end of the day, if it keeps – even one player from, you know, from a serious injury, well, then it's probably paid off. So anxious to see how it works and anxious to see how teams work to either make it work for them or defeat it in some way. Because right now, you know for a fact that special teams coordinators around the NFL are all figuring out, okay, what's in our favor here? Do we return it? Do we kick it? Do we let them return it? You know, with guys standing on the 40-yard line, for those who don't know what the rule is, probably should have mentioned that first. Now what you're going to have is you're going to have everybody lined up on the 40-yard line downfield instead of, you know, back at your own 35. Still kick off from the 35, but everybody's going to be lined up several yards downfield so that there's not so much of a running start for the defenders looking to tackle the return man. So we'll see how it goes.
And they can't move until the ball is kicked. They can't
right.
You know, it's right. They're trying to protect them in that area too, with the open area to fair catch, the open area not the fair catch, chance to run it back. But they're trying to create the idea that you would run it. I agree with you, Roy, about most of the kicks right now have been going into the end zone. So whether or not the coaches decide to change, they want to make the players run it back like Belichick did up in Boston for years. He never really kicked it into the end zone. He kicked it at a 4 or 5 yard line and went from there. Well, before we let's switch gears again and talk baseball, because for those of us that didn't get up at the 6 o'clock in the morning like Roy did,
I didn't see it, Don. I saw the second game at 6 o'clock in the morning on the way before I was getting ready to go to school. So I was in that category.
Well, for those of us that didn't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, the baseball season is opening tomorrow. And Roy, you not only covered the National Football League for 20 plus years down there in Tampa, but you also from the creation of not only the Bucks but the Rays. Your observation on getting the season started in Tampa?
Yeah, excited as always. Look, to me, I think the start of the Major League Baseball season should be a national holiday. And because, look, it may not be, you know, quote unquote, our national pastime anymore. Maybe football's taken over because it's so popular. But look, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, baseball, apple pie, Chevrolet, that kind of thing, hot dogs. It's Americana at its best. And, you know, we invented the game here in America. And, you know, to me, it'd be great if we all had the chance to celebrate it, you know, with a day off from work. But those of us who have the opportunity will steal away for some time for sure tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow night and take a peek and watch our favorite teams. And it'll be great. Always look forward to the start of the baseball season. For whatever reason, guys, this year, it just I felt like I was when I was a kid waiting for Christmas. I don't know why, but it just seems like the wait for this season has been longer than any I can remember. And it's no different. I mean, we're not starting any later than we have or any earlier. I mean, you know, we're starting on March 28th as opposed to, you know, back in the day, we started, you know, in a week into April or whatever. But for whatever reason, I don't know, I've just been, you know, anxious for baseball to get started for more than a month or so, and really looking forward to it. And, maybe it's because there's a lot of young players coming up. A lot of teams are leaning more on young players, at prospects who they strongly believe in. The teams who are established, like the Braves, the Phillies, you know, they're some of the best teams in all baseball, and I'm anxious to see how it all shapes out. You know, every year it seems now we have surprises, and maybe this is part of what I'm excited about, is that every year somebody seems to come out of nowhere that somebody didn't expect and does something special in Major League Baseball, whether it's not just a certain player, but it's a team. And, you know, so for baseball fans, there's plenty there, you know, whether it's, you know, Ronald Acuna Jr., stealing 70 bases, or the Diamondbacks, you know, making it to the World Series, the Phillies making it a couple of years ago when nobody really thought they could. There's always surprises, and it's one of the reasons we play it every day. And it's great and I can't wait for the start tomorrow afternoon for sure.
Well, the great thing about you, and you can say as many things about Tampa Bay and the Dome and so forth, but they know they're going to play at Yankee Stadium tomorrow.
Yeah.
They don't know they're going to play because rain is in the Northeast, the forecast. So in New York City, whether it's the Mets or the Yankees are scheduled for Yankee Stadium. But Roger, the Phillies Are they scheduled for Philadelphia or away?
Postponed, my boy. Postponed until Friday.
Already postponed.
Already postponed. Yeah.
Yeah, same with the Mets, by the way. Same with the Mets. And I'll be a little surprised if the Orioles host their game tomorrow, too, because, you know, let's face it, they're kind of in the same area. Maybe I'm not sure if the Nationals are on the road or not. But, yeah, it looks like bad weather's going to – but, you know, that, again, that's kind of part of it. That's the other one. It's one of the other things about baseball that sometimes is fun. I remember 2-3 years ago, there was a game in Detroit on opening day, and there were snow flurries, and I mean flurries, coming down, and they were still playing, and it was just something you'd never seen before. So hopefully we get most of the games in tomorrow, but, yeah, a couple of teams are going to have to wait until Friday. But you're right. Here in Tampa, as antiseptic as the atmosphere is at the Trop, at least they will play baseball tomorrow. And, you know, I've always kind of been a fan of, although it's a little unfair because, you know, teams certainly, you know, want the opportunity to host their home opener on opening day, of trying to play as many games in warm weather cities and dome stadiums as possible. You know, you're kind of flirting with disaster if you're trying to get, you know, games to play in Minnesota and, you know, maybe even Seattle this time of year. But and you're seeing it, you know, play out in Philadelphia and New York and maybe some other places tomorrow. But still, you know, hopefully they'll get going on Friday. And, you know, again, it's all part of what makes it fun.
Roger, it's Atlanta and bust. I mean, the Dodgers in Atlanta are pretty much forecast to dominate the National League. Dodgers are going to have another one of those great teams. Of course, there's some controversy now. We'll get into that later. But the Braves are certainly on top of things and ready to go.
Well, they are. And I will say this, as you know, Don, I talked to you last night. We had a tremendous storm here yesterday. The rain was just unbelievable. And it's been just gorgeous day to day. So that's that storm moving up the coast up to the northeast. But but I will say this, the mad dog, Chris Russo, picked the Phillies and the Orioles to be in the World Series. So I don't know.
You got to like the Orioles. They won 101 games last year, and they come out of spring training with an unbelievable record. I don't know whether spring training means anything or not, but I'll tell you, they were playing right here in Sarasota, and they were playing great baseball all over the Florida coast this spring training season. So he's not too far off with the Orioles, definitely.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think the Orioles. I was surprised that he picked the Phillies because – everybody seems to pick the Braves, and they feel it's the Dodgers. It'll be the Dodgers and the Orioles, a lot of people. I know. I don't know how you and Roy feel, but I thought that was interesting today that that's what he said on his show. So only time
Roy, I'm a Dodger guy. I think the Braves and the Dodgers are the two best teams in the National League. The Dodgers, of course, have gotten into the playoffs 2 years in a row and fumbled it up. But I think right now they've got the best team on the field.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, it's a super team, and they've certainly put together a team that you just marvel at on paper. But again, you know, the games are played for a reason, and you know, I think the Phillies can get there. I think that's quite possible. Certainly, I like what they've done in Philadelphia with setting themselves up for, you know, late in games when they're ahead. They've got a little bit more depth now in the outfield that they can move Castellanos out of there, move Schwarber out of there if they want to, put in a Christian Pache, put in a Brandon Marsh, let those guys, play the defensive role. And Johan Rojas is going to be a guy to watch as well. I like the team on the field for sure. To me, it's just a matter of, you know, can the pitching hold up? They've got, you know, pretty good depth. I mean, when you start with Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, you're in pretty good shape. And Taijuan Walker looks like he's going to start the season down in the minors or maybe on the IL. But, you know, just signed Matt Strom, who they obviously like as a, you know, kind of a bullpen guy and possible starter here and there. So, again, there's plenty of depth. It's really just a matter of everybody, you know, playing at their highest level. And if they do, they will absolutely be able to go toe-to-toe with the Braves. And the Dodgers as well. So no reason to count that team out. Not at all. They are a team to watch for sure, and they'll be fun. They'll be fun to watch.
Roger, let's go back to Philadelphia now because The Flyers have a couple of big games coming up the next couple of days. Very interesting column in the New York Post about how the Flyers could come into New York, Madison Square Garden, and then, of course, Pittsburgh come in as well or play Boston, and the fact that neither one of those games may mean anything in terms of the playoffs. And so I don't understand quite, and the column, of course, deals with the fact that how can you go this deep into the season and you never get how are you going to build up rivalries if you don't have the Rangers and the Flyers playing in Madison Square Garden, or the Rangers and the Flyers playing in Boston, or Rangers and Flyers playing in Pittsburgh? How can you have a rivalry? But the way the schedules are set up, it doesn't work that way.
No, I know you're right, and they did have that big win. What was it, last week? Against the Rangers, and so that was very encouraging as far as their position for the playoffs, and it was a big game. They needed that really, really bad. But but I agree with you, Don. I think that's one of the things that the NFL's done well. The baseball, to an extent, maybe a lesser extent, but have those division games and the real rivals at the end of the season, when you pretty much figure like the Braves and the Phillies are going to be fighting it out. Well, have them playing at the end of the season. And I think you're exactly right. That is what the NHL needs to do.
Well, Larry Brooks has a super column in the Post today.
Real quick, if you don't mind, I'm going to take a little bit different. I'm going to have a different take on that because I don't see what the problem is. I got to be honest. Now, they didn't play until February, the Rangers and Flyers, but since February, they'll have three games down the stretch against each other. Three of the four games that they'll play in the division happen after February, and two of them, one was last night, and the next one is a couple weeks from now. The Flyers against the Rangers. So there's the rivalry's there, and they'll play at the most important part of the season. Now, the issue, I suppose, is that, you know, the standings are kind of – I mean, we're not locked in, but it looks like, you know, certain – you know, things can still happen. But I don't think anybody's going to catch the Rangers. I mean, Carolina could, but certainly Philadelphia can. But, you know, here's the other thing. I don't think anybody expected Philadelphia to be – a playoff contender this year. They were in a rebuild for sure, new management, second year coach. And so, you know, I don't know that everybody expected it, but at the end of the day, the games are there. Last night was another good game between the two teams. They could see each other in the playoffs. This could be a playoff preview, but maybe a year from now, you know, maybe they'll play. I don't know. Maybe they'll mix it up a little bit differently in terms of how those games are played. But when three of the four games between the Rangers and Flyers are from February on, I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, maybe you got to wait for the rivalry, but it's still there. I mean, the other thing is the other side of that argument is fans want to see other teams. You know, because if you add more games to the division, you know, division rivalry, which is part of the argument, well, you might miss out on an opportunity to see Edmonton, or you might miss out on an opportunity to see you know, one of the other special teams, maybe Colorado from the other division or the other conference. And I would think fans want the opportunity to see them too. So, you know, with 82 games, there's plenty to go around for everybody, and I think the NHL's done a pretty good job of keeping the rivalries intact. They're still there. The games are still important. And if they face each other in the playoffs, you'll get plenty of those rivalry games, guys. Plenty.
Well, we just take a quick look, and of course, Tampa Bay, which they pointed out that the paper had played, gone through a little streak here, boy, which has been very good for them. And right now, the 39-25, right there with Toronto at 40-21. You know, you look at the top, and Florida and Boston are battling it out back and forth. So. And the Flyers, Roger, are behind them. So there's a lot of activity still to go in the last, 14 games of the season.
Well, there is. And just on the business perspective, I saw the other day that the Flyers and the Phillies have gone into a partnership on developing that whole stadium complex. I'm waiting for the Eagles to get involved, but they're going to make it like we've always talked about, and like in these new facilities that are in where they build up with hotels, the whole nine yards, and like the Battery over in Smyrna where the Braves are. I mean, that's just quite a place. And that's what they're going to do in South Philadelphia and the complex. And I think that that'll make it a destination where people will be able to go down, have dinner, and then, you know, go over and see an event. Now, it'll be interesting. We don't talk about the NBA, about why we don't talk about the NBA, but I don't know whether that'll change the Sixers or not, Don, because you know, they're determined to go to Chinatown to the old gallery facility on Market Street, which I think is stupidity. I know.
I don't agree. That first of all, the traffic situation, and then, you know, where are they going to put the parking, and where are they going to put all the other things to go with it? And when you're going to destroy Chinatown, which is a very strong entity within Philadelphia by itself. So I'm 100% opposed to that. Yeah, you're right, Roger. But let me get back, because Roger's leading me right into you, Roy. As we talk about complexes, the commissioner of baseball seems to say he's giving Tampa a wave. Last year, it was incumbent upon them coming forth with a major plan with solid financing and all the rest. I haven't seen anything where they've come through with any of that. And yet, I guess with all the other problems he has with Ohtani and everybody else, he's not going to get around to that problem.
Well, the truth of the matter is they do have a plan. They announced it several months ago that, you know, the plan is to now rebuild right next door to where they are now, a new complex.
Right.
The city's involved. It's going to be one of those, you know, community centers where you've got this, you know, the baseball stadium and, you know, housing and you know, restaurants and clubs and things like that nearby. You know, in the same complex, it'll be a kind of a destination type area. And, you know, the Rays are hoping that it works out. The problem with it is it's in the same place now that nobody wants to go to. And it's not like it's a bad neighborhood. It's not. It's just kind of difficult to get there and, you know, on time. It's not centrally located. Three quarters of your, you know, of the area right around it is the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, you can't draw fish into the sand. So it's just hard for everybody coming from three directions as opposed to four to get there. And, you know, it was never the best place to put a stadium. It's still not the best place. And yet they're trying it again, or maybe they won't. We'll see. But that's the plan. And I think right now, because, you know, they're talking about expansion. So it's not like Tampa's going to lose their team. They're going to make it work. And, you know, as long as Tampa's, you know, I think Major League Baseball looks at it like this. As long as Tampa's happy, you know, drawing 8,000-10,000 people, and as long as they're winning with $70 million payrolls when, you know, other teams are spending $250 million, you know, why fix it if it's not broken? It's, you know, it's not an ideal situation, but it works for Tampa Bay, the organization. It doesn't work for the city. It doesn't work for the community as well. It could still be better. And you know, but if the people in Tampa don't want to step up and make it happen here, well, then you know, they kind of leave it to the owners. And if the owners can only find a 50-50 partner in the people in Hillsborough or Pinellas County, then that's where it's going to be. So, you know, nothing's really set in stone. Still a few hurdles that have to be cleared, but that's the plan, and I think that's why the commissioner has kind of backed off a little bit and said, okay, we'll let you guys figure this one out, and, you know, hopefully they do.
Well, let's bring Frank in for a moment, because he knows more about what happens in the city official category than any of us do. And Frank, I agree with everything that Roy has said. The only problem is I don't see yet, and I know he had the, as he indicated, the plans have been in effect for a couple of months, but I haven't seen where the money's going to come from.
That's the major problem. The state and the county do not have the ad valorem tax that they had prior to the 80s and 90s, and were able to build stadiums. this stadium is going to be over $995 million. Some of that's got to come from the city coffers. Some's got to come from the county coffers. The other's got to come from Sternberg's coffers. And he hasn't to this date has not put up the amount of money that he needs to put up. Promises are promises, and they're only on paper to show that they're lying about something. But this is his third go around, and if they don't figure it out soon, I think Pat Williams will have a chance to sneak in there because the Orlando Sports Authority does have the cash in hand to do exactly what they're talking about, to put up a stadium, to put up to bring in a team, and they do have the billionaires backing on it. So it's not a done deal as far as I'm concerned. I mean, this administration has taken a much more aggressive lead than the past. However, they don't have the coffers. The money's not in the coffers. The plan to redevelop that area into a park, quasi-business, residential area is a great idea. There's no doubt about that, and they'll probably recoup their money real fast. The problem is, where are they going to get the money to put it up, to do all this reconstruction? And Roy, I heard what you said about Tampa, and I totally agree. But over there, the problem was they had to restructure all the sewer system down in that area to be able to do it. And it came into hundreds of millions of dollars just to put the sewers in, not counting the streets that they have to repave, nor the off-ramps that they have to provide from the Selman or from I-4 into the area. So it's a blessing in disguise to the taxpayers of Tampa that they're not going there. And I hope they can get this thing worked out soon because time is running out. And so are patients, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, guys, I'll leave you with this. And what Frank just said is really important. That's it's different here in Florida because you've really got a lot of fixed income people, retirement income residents, and you just can't ask them to start paying much more than they are already. And that's a prohibiting factor in a lot of cases. And when you start doing all the research studies and what it's going to take to build a stadium and make it all work for you, at the end of the day, what you need is you need an owner very similar to Jeff Finnick, who basically rebuilt all of downtown around the stadium or the arena where the Lightning play. If
right.
You've got an owner who's got willing to put the money in himself and risk that, it's going to get done. The problem is you don't have that here in Tampa Bay because Stuart Sternberg, as Frank pointed out, he's yet to even put up the $480 million that he's been asked to put up for the project as it sits right now. So until anybody sees that, there's no reason for the city to step up either, the community. So and he's been, it's been that way for him for forever. The pockets just aren't deep enough. And I think what Major League Baseball would probably love more than anything is if somebody came along who's a true multi-billionaire willing to buy this team and do for it in Tampa Bay what needs to be done to find out if this is really a viable market. So one day maybe we'll get there. But tomorrow they'll be throwing the ball around and hitting it and over at the Trop. And all those thoughts will be far from everybody's minds because baseball will be back and it'll be a lot of fun. So, guys,
yeah,
it's been great as always. Appreciate you having me again, and we'll talk again next week.
You're the best, Roy. Have a great
Thanks,
week.
Roy. We were hoping to have Pat Williams on with us right after, Roy. Have we got Pat?
Not yet. I'm still trying to get a hold of him.
Okay. We haven't been able to get a hold of him so far tonight because we want to talk about the NBA, which we've already settled to talk about. And, of course, Pat Williams for most people that are...
You got Pat?
I'm waiting for...
Yeah. While we're waiting, Don, I don't know whether you heard... Alexandria, Virginia turned down the bill to move the Capitals and the
Tom, hey, Roger, we have Pat Williams on.
Okay, Pat's on, Don.
All right, Pat Williams. First, whoa, William, we got a lot of interference on here somewhere.
No,
hold on a second.
Game.
Oh, he's at
a baseball game, Don.
Oh,
Don.
Pat, how are you? First of all, let me just inform our listeners that Pat and I sort of in the same boat. We're sitting in easy chairs watching these games because Pat had a terrible fall a couple of weeks ago and broke a couple of bones in his leg. And so, first of all, Pat, before we talk about anything else, how's the leg coming along?
Well, Don, good question. I'm doing much better. I fell down some stairs 6 weeks ago today and fractured the femur in my right leg. I don't recommend that to anybody, but the surgeons repaired it the next night, and for the last, almost 6 weeks now, it's rehab.
Right.
And I'm getting a little bit better, and I'm getting out and about. I'm at a granddaughter softball game tonight, and so, you know, it's important, I think, to get back in the swing of things. But little by little, I am feeling better and determined to get the use of my leg back.
Terrific, terrific. Of course, the owner of the Orlando Magic, the man that brought the Magic to Orlando, Florida, where he was general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers for so many years, decided to step out and develop his own team. And that's exactly what happened. And we give Pat and all his entire crew all the credit in the world. And when you look at the standings right now, Pat, you had told me last year we have a lot of young players that are going to improve. And I think you're right. I think they have improved this year. And quite a battle right now between Cleveland, the Knicks, and Orlando. Your thoughts, first of all, on your team? And
are finishing on a high note. And the community, the Orlando, greater Orlando area, is getting quite excited about this team and looking forward to a good playoff run. We've got 10 regular season games left and should finish well and then we'll wait and see what the playoffs hold.
Pat, there were two people in Orlando, Florida that had the vision. You were one of the two, and the other was the Cowboy. Built quite a complex there in Orlando, Florida. And you two guys saw what was going to happen. Now it's one of the best cities in America. And you've talked about it many, many times. We talked about the baseball situation. And is there any change in your baseball thinking right now?
Don, we're still plowing ahead. You know, baseball does want to expand eventually and add two teams. We don't know how that's going to play out, but we keep optimistic. The growth in Orlando is unbelievable. We just learned, Don, this week, we just passed Denver, as the 16th largest media market. We passed Miami and Denver in the last year, 20,000 homes behind Minneapolis, St. Paul, and should catch them sometime this year. And then the next city on the list is Detroit. And so we're moving up in the next few years. We're going to be up there around 14, 13. I think we're going to catch Tampa Bay eventually. The growth in Central Florida is just astounding. And we've become a major city. And I think a city that baseball has to really pay close attention to. There's so much to offer baseball. And we're doing everything we can to be ready when that time comes.
Well, you and Walt Disney had the vision. So, Roger, you're on with Pat Williams.
Pat, you know, we were talking about the different NBA situations and about the Sixers, you know, wanting to go to Chinatown and the Phillies and the Flyers have formed a partnership to develop the South Philadelphia complex, making it a destination. But I heard today that Alexandria, Virginia turned down, rejected the idea of moving the Wizards and the Capitals there. So they're going to remain in D.C. You and I and Don and Frank remember when it was a big deal to build and move into downtown D.C. from the Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland. And it just goes to show you, when you have inner city problems, all of a sudden things change. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, it's a good point you make. But I think the Wizards and the hockey team belong in downtown Washington. And I'm, I'm following it closely. But to get new buildings built, you know, the price of construction today, you know, it's just, it's overwhelming. And it's not a casual thing. When we started on this baseball idea here, the ballpark estimate was about $1.2 billion. The last estimate we've gotten was $1.7 billion. And
wow.
In the next 3-4 years, I mean, heaven knows what it'll be. So the idea, and I just saw the story this week. I just saw the story this week about Nashville. The mayor of Nashville was asked about Major League Baseball coming to Nashville, and the mayor simply said, "You know anybody here wealthy enough to build a ballpark?" meaning there, it doesn't sound like there's any public money up there. She said it twice. You know anybody wealthy enough to build a ballpark? So,
well, you know, Las Vegas doesn't want the A's. You know, that's what I read. And why wouldn't the A's come over and they could realign the setup of the divisions, in my opinion? But you know more about it than me.
Well, the A's, you know, are the A's, and they go about things differently. You know, we've got to see if they can get a ballpark built in Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, that's
wow.
Still up in the air. I'll tell you what else is up in the air. You know, the ballpark in St. Pete. You know, the city
yes.
council and all still has not approved the funding. You know, I think that was a premature announcement that was made last fall. But they're still has to go before the council, and they have to vote on approving the funding, and we haven't. That doesn't come up till probably May, so that's far from finished in St. Pete. So there's a lot of stuff swirling, that's for sure, in the world of sports, and you guys haven't even gotten into the Ohtani thing, I'm sure.
Well, I was going to save that. I was going to save that till the next part, but not just Ohtani, the whole gambling situation has blown out of control right now, I think, Pat, and, you know, I know you have a player that they're questioning about some of his endeavors of investment and so forth about gambling with that, and it's becoming more of a problem every single day. I know they're taking a lot of money in for it, but there are a lot of people out there that gamble, Pat, and I just don't see how they're going to solve the problem.
Well, Don, I guess it was 2018, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of gambling as a legal activity.
Right.
And the end result was, you know, over these years, there's money to be made in getting their endorsements, and the major league teams, you know, and the leagues responded to it, and here we are. But I think we all have to be concerned. Where does this all lead? Is it just part of life? And are there going to be casualties along the way? I understand. Our granddaughter just hit a line drive base hit into left center field.
All right.
Way to go, Nolan. That a girl. Hit a screaming liner into left center. That a boy.
How old is she, Pat?
She's in the ninth grade. And
good.
Started playing varsity softball as a seventh grader. and now is in the ninth grade and
terrific.
Looks like a very, very, very promising young softball player.
Great. That's great. Great. Roger?
No, that's great. I'll tell you, Pat, I love hearing stories about you sports because I was just talking to my daughter earlier, lives up in North Central Pennsylvania, and my granddaughter played in 100 softball games last year. She's in seventh grade, but no more Little League this year, okay? Strictly travel and middle school, you know, because you've just got to take a break. But I love to see that, and I'm involved locally here outside of Atlanta. So the I envy you being there. There's nothing like being at a game to see kids play.
And kids who are baseball and softball kids. So we're seeing an awful lot of young players.
Pat, the one thing you just mentioned really comes to the fore because just before you came out, we were talking about the stadium situation here. I thought those numbers that you gave were really amazing because I know when we first started talking 3 years ago and you had those initial numbers, then it jumped a couple of years ago to the second plateau and where you are now. And the city of Tampa, I mean, I just don't see where there's any possibility that they can come up with that kind of money, $175 billion, to build a ballpark. I don't know where they can come up with.
Well, Don, they're talking about building a 30,000-seat ballpark, which would be by far the smallest in baseball. Ours would be like 45. And our projected numbers show that, you know, anything less than 45,000 financially, we can't make it. You know, it wouldn't work. And so we'll see how. In other words, I don't think with a new ballpark, the Rays' strategy will be any different. You know, they would still be the same, operate the same way, and they may draw a little bit better initially, but still in the same location. It's still tough to get to, still not an ideal location, still not a big population center. So they're going to still have to operate the same way. So that's just an observation. But that vote's coming up in May, and we'll see how that is resolved. But, you know, the county in St. Pete has a lot of issues. You know, the beach has to be repaired, and The Phillies over in Clearwater, who the county has taken care of since 1947, the Phillies are looking for a big swag of money to upgrade their minor league facilities, and the county's going to have to look after them. A lot of things going on in that county. And so stay tuned. We'll see how it all plays out.
Pat, you forgot
Roger?
That the Blue Jays are also looking for a new stadium. So Pinellas County is completely overrun with requests and do not have the, as we spoke before, they don't have the ad valorem tax. They can't put another sales tax on. And they can't really, you know, St. Pete was always thought of as a retirement community. And it still is. Even though there's a lot of people moving in from California and New York that are much younger, but still there is not the tax base there to be able to support that kind of money.
Well, that's just from afar. That would be our observation as well. They do have some tourism, but it's not gigantic. We average over here about $30 million a month. You know, in tourist tax revenues, and that's generated this year by about 80 million visitors. That number is expected to jump appreciably next year, and so that gives us a chance to get a ballpark built. But if Pinellas County can't pull it off this spring, we're waiting. We'd love to have the Rays here. Love to have them.
Pat, Pat, let's get into your sport. What do you tell us a little bit about what you think the playoffs are going to, because now you got the play-in, then you got the regular playoffs. How do you see the playoffs running in the NBA?
Well, Don, there's no question. Boston had such a dominant season. You know, they're absolutely unbelievable. Milwaukee seems to be getting their thing together under Doc Rivers.
Right.
So those two teams, you know, can play with everybody, and you don't want to see them in the playoffs until maybe the finals in the East. You don't want any part of them early on. Cleveland has had a terrific year, but are having some struggles. Miami is just not really having a typical Miami season. The sleeper in the whole thing are the Knicks. You know, Brunson has turned into such a devastating offensive player, and
right.
they've got all these role players who step up and do amazing things. So if I'm a playoff team, I would be very, very concerned about having to play the Knicks, particularly early in the playoffs. So it's going to be fascinating right now.
How about the Sixers? Because their MVP hadn't really come back yet. How do you look at the Sixers and whether he's going to be healthy enough to play?
Well, that's a great question, Don. If he comes back and healthy, well, then they're a contender, no question. Without him, they're just an average team. Not a poor team, but they're just an average team. With him, they're a threat to go to the finals. So, but we're not getting any real signals on how he's coming along. No word that I'm hearing, Don, about his condition and how he's responding. But
right.
Stay tuned. That's gonna be a big story here in the next several weeks, obviously.
Roger.
Yeah, Don, Frank just informed me that we need to go wrap this segment up at 8 o'clock. So I just want to ask Pat, and then you can wrap it up. Pat, where exactly in Orlando will your proposed ballpark be?
There's a 35.5 acre plot. It's county land. And it's right next to Aquatica, the water park, the SeaWorld water park. It's right across the street, basically, from SeaWorld. The 528 runs right by it. I-4 runs right by it. South I Drive runs right by it. All the major intersections run right by it. It's an absolutely ideal location. And We're watching it very closely. It's raw land, you know. There's nothing to look at that's very pretty right now. It's just raw land, but an ideal spot to build a Major League Baseball team, a ballpark. It would have to have a dome. With weather issues in Florida as they are, must have
sure.
a dome. And but we're very, very excited about it. The reaction of people is solid. It's about 6 miles east of Disney, 6 miles west of Universal Studios, maybe a 12-15 minute drive from downtown. And
wow.
we feel that it's a wonderful spot that the county pointed out to us years ago, and that's our plan. That's where the ballpark would be built.
Like, well, Pat, we'll talk many times down the road a little bit, but at the same time, thank you very, very much for your time tonight. Best of luck to your granddaughter playing softball, and more importantly, keep that rehab going, will you?
John, thank you. I've got a session tomorrow, and stay in touch. I'll talk to you guys along the way.
Thanks,
John.
Thank you.
God bless. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to switch over now. We've touched on a lot of sports here in the first hour of the program, so we're going to make another jump because we're going to go right now to the UFL, which gets underway this weekend. I'll tell you, one thing you have to commend Fox TV. They have really been giving promotion over the last week or so to the upcoming opening of the season of the UFL. And, of course, Trevor Bosco always leads our coverage of that. So, Trevor, if you're ready to go, and I know you've got a very, very special guest, and we'll certainly be listening to that as well.
Yeah, we had to we've got a little glitch because Pat called in on my line, and we patched him in, so I have to call the other two and get them on the line.
Okay.
Okay,
we'll hold it right here. Trevor will be on. He's going to be on with Vinny Papale. Vince Papale, of course, all the Philadelphians know very well with his great career with the Philadelphia Eagles and the movie and all the things that went with it. Well, in the UFL, his son, Vinny, is a UFL all-star receiver, and he and Trevor have gotten together during the week to talk a little bit about being on tonight. So I know they'll have a lot to say about this new league, which Trevor actually knows more about it than Roger and I do, because we've been following the National Football League and haven't had an opportunity to see much of the USF so far. And is Trevor with us yet? Not yet. Okay. Roger?
You know, I just want to get back to what we were talking about earlier, Don. You know, what I mentioned about the Wizards and the Capitals. And it shows, you know, I know Pat, I agree with Pat, you know, probably be good to be in downtown D.C., but with all the crime and the issues and everything, I think it's really having an effect. And that's why Alexandria, because a good friend of mine lives in Alexandria, and that's not that far, you know, and it's easy to get to on the metro system, because that system that they built down in the D.C., Northern Virginia, Maryland area is just really a good system. I mean, you know, what they have here, it's only in two counties, MARTA, because the voters have always voted against it. And like Cobb County has their own system. Gwinnett County has their own, and they just don't want to be part of MARTA. But I think that that is a signal when Alexandria turned down them moving there, and that's not that far. But, you know, don't you wonder if they had stayed and developed Landover, Maryland, the way that has grown?
Okay. Let's bring Trevor in while he gets Vinny ready.
Yeah.
Vinny will be joining us. UFL football gets underway this weekend. As I said, terrific advertisement on Fox. I've really seen a great influx in the visibility of the USL because they're going to be doing games on Saturday and Sunday. Trevor's all ready to go. So, Trevor, I know you're going to have a guest with us in a couple of seconds, but anything on the top of the line you want to talk about before we get him on the line?
Some of the big headlines. You covered it pretty much nail on the head there. But SiriusXM is going to have season-long coverage as well. ESPN and Fox will both have post-game shows for every game, and they'll have their own team of analysis members and stuff like that. So it's going to be very well covered, and the product should be hopefully very well done.
Roger?
Well, I'll tell you what, Trevor, we've talked about this for months, that waiting for this day to come, and it's here, and it'll be very exciting. And have there been many transactions in the last 48 hours, 72 hours that you want to talk about that you're familiar with?
Nothing huge on the transaction list. There was these final roster cuts for each team about a week ago. But the biggest thing is teams are now announcing their starters and their captains. There's about six teams, that have announced their starting quarterbacks. There are two teams that have yet to do so officially. That is Birmingham and Michigan. The Birmingham Stallions, Skip Holtz, has already come out and confirmed he will be using multiple quarterbacks in week one. So we will see a bit of Matt Corral, Adrian Martinez, and J.M.R. Smith. With the Michigan Panthers, I suspect E.J. Perry will be the starter. but I'm not too certain. They might have a battle going on there now. But another big headline was the Houston Roughnecks really not figuring it out quite yet. Quarterback three is confirmed, actually an NFL journeyman, Reed Sinnett, who's seen regular season time, who's going to be deemed on the inactive roster off rip, which is very surprising. The starting job is up against Nolan Henderson and Jarrett Guantanamo, who played at Texas in college, a pretty big name. But we'll see, obviously, week one. But I think based on what I've seen so far, the weakest quarterback room right now is either San Antonio or Houston. San Antonio did make a little bit of a shocker. They opted to go with Chase Gerbers as their starting quarterback, a name not many people might know, but he did have a stint with the Raiders on their practice squad. But Tom Flacco, Joe Flacco's little brother, was put in that quarterback two position, and quarterback three will be taken up by Quinn Dormady. So definitely another strange revelation going on there. But I trust Wade Phillips and his coaching staff to get the most out of whoever they put in that starting position.
He's an outstanding
really
coach.
3 days. Oh, yeah.
He joined us.
Oh, sweet.
Somebody else is talking. I didn't hear who it was. Was it you, Frank?
Yeah. Vinny's on the phone, is ready to go.
Vinny's on the line right now. Okay. Trevor, give us a little bit of a background because Vinny had a great year last year. I know he's looking forward to the weekend and getting started this year. Give us a little background and bring him on.
Well, I'm definitely a huge fan of Vinny. Just wanted to say I'm a huge fan of you, Vinny, and I know you had a really good season last year with the Memphis Showboats after a really good year with the 2022 Tampa Bay Bandits. But what are your expectations going into this season with Case Cookus, Darius Victor, a whole new plethora of weapons on offense? What are your expectations?
I mean, obviously, day one when you walk in, the expectation is always a championship. So day one, that's the end goal. But, I mean, you got to go through 10 games to get there. And we expect to be perform a lot better than last year, just to be totally honest. I mean, we started off 0-3 last year, and we got on a little hot streak and ended 5-5. But we expect to be better. I have a feeling we are. It's been exciting this camp to sort of see us sort of gel together as a team. And I think we're going to have a high-powered offense that's going to be fun to watch. And, yeah, I'm just excited. Yeah.
What's your biggest, I guess, shock or surprise this offseason so far, if it comes to the league or if it comes to maybe a player that is working with you in camp, like Jonathan Adams or Trey Williams, one of those guys? Any names you want to shout out?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a great appreciation for Jay Adams. Just I've watched him the last 2 years in the USFL. He's always had a knack for making big plays, and I never really had a chance to obviously be on the team with him. And it's just cool to line up next to guys like that and sort of have those extra pieces of the puzzle that are going to make us a dynamic offense that I think we're going to be. So, yeah, it's just exciting. I think our guys outside, we got a lot of tall guys outside, DeAndre Overton, and Jay Adams is tall, and D. Anderson. So it's going to be fun to watch, and there's going to be a lot of exciting plays, I'm sure.
And obviously the big question mark is, you know, unfortunately Cole Kelly is going to move on with other endeavors. But what are your expectations from your quarterback groups with Troy Williams, Case Cookus, and Josh Love coming in there in that quarterback three spot?
I mean, the expectation obviously is just to win as a team. I mean, they're all extremely talented. It's been fun to watch them sort of, again, get a hold of that offense and really make plays in practice. It'll be nice to finally go against someone else instead of our defense on a Sunday. So, yeah, I mean, they're all extremely talented. They're all really smart, and it's going to be fun for sure. I'm sorry. There's
and
a
what
fire alarm going off in the background here. I don't know if you guys can hear
it. No worries. What have you learned as a person, a player, and just overall as a man going through these progressions in springtime football, going from XFL to USFL and now seeing this huge merger, the biggest springtime league ever? What have you learned in this journey?
Yeah, I mean, it's just what I always say is just taking advantage of opportunities. I mean, every guy in this league has their story, and if you ask every guy, it's probably pretty crazy. I'm not the only one with an interesting story with a wild past. Each guy in this league has their own story of how they ended up here and how they're trying to get back to the next level. I mean, a lot of guys got impacted by COVID, injury, whatever it may be. But my story in particular is just taking advantage of opportunity. I mean, the end goal of this for myself and everyone involved is the NFL. I mean, let's just be real. So, and this gives us the opportunity to do that. And with last year, the XFL and the USFL being separate, it was tough because we were competing against each other. But now us being together and sort of on one team together, I think it's going to give a lot more guys opportunities because the talent pool has gotten smaller and there's going to be more opportunities for guys after the season. I really just think my personal story is just taking advantage of opportunities. And this league has given me the chance to do that. I know there's hurdles I've went through along the way. It's just like I got drafted the first year in the Tampa Bay Bandits, and I sort of survived through camp there. And then I made it to the Showboats last year, which was great to play in front of Memphis. And then the merger happens, and there's a lot of unknowns. I signed with New Orleans. New Orleans ends up folding. Then Flip goes to be the Memphis head coach again. And it's just a lot of crazy scenarios, and I'm just glad I sort of survived it out and just kept working because I'm just really happy to be here right now and have this opportunity. But really it's just taking advantage of opportunities. And a lot of guys have their own stories, but that's what this league is all about.
I definitely will say, Vinny, it's more than surviving. In your case, you're a very talented player.
Yeah.
And, John DeLaFibio.
Yeah, no, there's all these hurdles, like even with these leagues over the last couple of years with the merger and all that stuff. I mean, you just never really know. It's just I made it 3 years now, and I'm extremely grateful to be here and playing for Memphis, obviously.
I did want to ask you, because you did mention Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Bandits, and then last year the Memphis Showboats. You played with Todd Haley as your head coach.
Yeah.
Now you are introduced to a new system, a new head coach, a new staff.
Mm-hmm.
What's that transition been like?
It's definitely like a little bit of a shock at first. I mean, because I was with Todd for 2 years. I got used to that system. I didn't really have to learn a new offense last year. And coming in here this year, it's a totally new offense. Totally new scheme. But I honestly think that's one of the strengths of my game is being able to pick up on that stuff fast and sort of integrate into it quickly. But it's been nice. I mean, each coach has their own way of doing things, and I'm really excited about how Flip is doing things. And it's I think the way he runs things is definitely an NFL caliber type of way. And that's what I'm excited about. And everyone else in the room is excited about it as well. And I think because of that, we're going to have a really high chance of being successful in this league because, we have a really, again, high-powered offense that I'm excited about and a lot of good pieces that are going to be fun to watch.
And another question, because, the training camp videos and stuff come out on Twitter and Instagram. I hear John DeLaFibio mention the Stallions quite a bit. You mentioned obstacles earlier. That is a huge obstacle for you guys in your conference. Do you believe you can overcome? What are your thoughts on that message he's sending to you guys to overcome that rival, in a sense?
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. The last 2 years, the Stallions have sort of ran the USFL, and now they're the USFL conference. So, I mean, we won't be the only ones circling them on our calendar. I mean, everyone wants to take the top dog out, and obviously we have history because each year both of us played them twice. So they're a conference opponent, and I've personally never beaten them. So obviously that's something we want to do, and to do the things that we want to do this year, we're going to have to beat them. Like, to be the best, you got to beat the best, and that's what we're planning on doing. But again, there's also nine other games or eight other games that we're going to have to worry about. But I'd be lying if I said that Stallions one isn't circled on the calendar just because it's a conference game, and frankly, because it's just the Stallions. Everyone wants to beat them.
And I like that he's sending that message to you guys so that, you know the goal. And I think it's made clear because, like you said, they did run the USFL for two seasons. And unfortunately, like you said, you weren't able to accomplish a victory over them. But I do believe that I mean, you mentioned that the quality of competition is completely different now. You guys have new faces and some of the better, you know, players from both leagues. But what are your expectations for the future of this league? And do you think that maybe in some scenario you see yourself a part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think they finally have the perfect model because last year, I mean, like I said, the USFL and the XFL were sort of going head-to-head. Now there's no more of that. It's just one sort of united thing, which is better for everyone involved, I think. And obviously this is the first year where really it's going to be only just us, and they're touting it as the premier spring football league, and it'll be just that. And I think it'll be the only one for a long time. And I think it's just going to continue to grow year after year. I mean, it's only 8 teams right now. I expected each year to add a couple teams at least. That's the way I see it going, and I think it's going to end up being a real feeder league for guys into the NFL as free agents because these guys are playing professional football. I mean, you're in professional locker rooms, playing professional schemes, playing against professional guys. So this is really valuable football that's being played for guys and for teams in the NFL that are looking to sign free agents. I mean, like I just said, these guys, we're playing a lot of meaningful football against very talented players, NFL caliber players. So we're all going to be seasoned, and I think it's going to end up being the premier sort of avenue, I guess you would say, for free agents landing on NFL teams going forward.
I like the way you put that, the premier avenue. And like you said, you guys are playing meaningful football against high-quality talent, but also you're playing year-round. So, like, when the NFL season and training camp comes around, you guys are already warmed up and ready to go.
Yeah, we're like in mid-season form by then. I mean, preseason should be a breeze. I mean, we'll play at least 10 games. And, again, that's sort of the goal for the league. They're pretty open about it, is to get guys that opportunity. And I think these guys, you're going to start really seeing them being the free agents that are getting signed every offseason because of the value of the football that we're playing. It is professional. I mean, most every guy here has played in the NFL at some point or another.
I have a player question for you. Who was the most talented corner that you went against in the last two seasons of the USFL, and who talked the most trash?
Jeez. I don't know.
If it's too difficult, I understand.
Yeah. I mean, it's not great with names, honestly. I can't remember someone off the top of my head. And honestly, I don't talk too much crap. And I feel like because of that, if guys say anything to me, I just sort of give them the silent treatment. And after a while, they just sort of shut up because they usually want to rise out of you, and I don't give it. But, yeah, I mean, I can't think of one specifically. I mean, there's a kid on the general that, what?
A Paris Ford or?
I think he might play for the Battlehawks now. I'm not sure, but.
Dave Onoskie Henry or Channing?
I think so. He's good. I think he's a pretty good player. And I remember first year in the USFL in Tampa Bay. We had a good battle. I think he was playing for the Generals. And I think he's a really good player, and I think he's on St. Louis now. And I'm sure he'll do good things this year, but hopefully we win that one in a few weeks, actually, now.
I do have another question. Now that the leagues are merged, and now you're going to be reintroduced to a guy you played with, Jordan Te'amu, other guys like A.J. McCarron, what are your thoughts about seeing some of the former players and teammates you used to play against and with?
Honestly, I think it's pretty cool. It just goes back to that whole football being a brotherhood thing. I know you line up the ball, you might be wearing different colors. I'm on different teams now, but sort of that bond doesn't really leave. And all these guys, like I was just talking about, they all have their own story and all have the same end goal. So it's really cool to just play against them and root for them, and like secretly a little bit, I mean, you always root for your guys, but it's cool. And it's honestly cool, everyone sort of being in Arlington. So it's not like Jordan's in Washington, D.C. Like he's in Arlington. I've seen him already. And we always stay in touch. So it's just cool the way the league is set up this year that we can see all the guys I previously played with, because those relationships never really die.
And you're right, football is a brotherhood, and you probably have so many relationships that'll last a long time that you're building now.
Yeah.
Even. But I will say this. Well, ask this. How's the training camp experience been? I know it was hubbed in Arlington. What's it been just being with all the guys?
I mean, that's one of the reasons you play, is just for that camaraderie and brotherhood. That's one of the best parts of football, is just sort of being on a team and being in a locker room and just being around the guys. So it's cool. I mean, seeing a team come together with the merger. I mean, all these guys sort of came from wherever they came from, whether the XFL, the NFL, the USFL. So it was sort of like a hodgepodge of guys that sort of came together and sort of came together throughout camp. So it was fun to watch, and we have a really close team. I mean, a lot of guys knew of each other, but we might have played on different teams here and there. But again, it's cool to come together as one, as the Memphis Showboats this year, and really play for something bigger than ourselves, and that's the team, that's the city of Memphis, and
I have two more questions for you, Benny. In this past off season, what would you say your biggest skill or your biggest trait you've improved on your game has been?
I mean, I always try to work on, like, I guess top of route stuff, just being cleaner there. I mean, you can never get too good at getting out of in and out of breaks. Just speed at the top of the route is always something I try to improve and get better at. And also, like, patience, I think, with routes, because some things, not that I rush into them, but receivers have a tendency sometimes to rush into a route when it doesn't have to be rushed into, and it can just sort of look sloppy. It's just running routes under control and having a good speed and just clean breaks. That's really it's something that I always try to improve in the off season.
Okay, so I did lie earlier. I have two more questions now. What do you think about the NFL's rule change to their kickoff using the XFL format, and then also the ban of the hip drop tackle?
Honestly, I think it's pretty interesting considering we're not even doing it anymore. I never even had a chance to use that model, and they sort of adopted it from the XFL, and with the merger, we're going to the NFL model, and now the NFL model is going to the XFL model. So it's sort of an interesting dynamic, I guess. But I think it's the way the game is headed. It's player safety, and I think it's important. I mean, kickoff, kick return is a very high collision play, and it's meant to protect guys. And I think it's probably the right move. We're heading that way. And with the hip drop tackle, I've never been a fan of getting tackled that way, so I'm on side of it. It's probably an unpopular opinion. I've seen a lot of guys sort of get their ankles or knees rolled because of it. I always sort of like hold my breath when I see someone else get tackled like that. However, I do think it is hard to distinguish what is and what isn't. There might be a little gray area, and I could see a lot of controversial penalties in this upcoming NFL season because of it. But I mean, it's sort of a double-edged sword, because me as a receiver, I would not want to be tackled that way, because I've seen too many guys get hurt. But then you got the defender sort of saying, like, how else am I supposed to bring down a guy like, what, Rob Gronkowski, who's huge? I mean, so it's interesting, and I'm curious to see how it'll play out. But I think there's going to be a lot of controversial calls, and it's going to be talked about all next year.
My final question is going to be a two-parter, so I kind of lied again. I have two more questions. If the Tampa Bay Bandits come back, are you one of the first guys that are, you know, I'm there? Or, like, is that a yes or no?
No, I mean, I've really enjoyed my time in Memphis, and I love the city. It's great playing in front of fans that actually care about the team. They really bought into the Showboats last year, and I was fortunate enough to be on one of the teams that actually played in front of fans. That was the interesting thing about the USFL, sort of like the Breakers or teams in other hubs. They sort of played in empty stadiums, but I was fortunate enough to play in front of Memphis, and I love the city and love the people there, and they embraced me, which was cool. So I don't know. I never got a chance to experience Tampa, so I'm Memphis all the way.
That's sad to hear, but it's also good to hear. But my final question.
Who knows if we'll ever make a comeback?
I would, you know, I'm crossing my fingers. But my final question to you, Vinny, is more like a philosophical question. But where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Oh, 10 years. Hopefully I'm wrapping up my NFL career. shoot, I'll be 37 by then. But I don't know, 10 years, I'll still definitely be involved in football in some capacity, whether it's, again, wrapping up my playing career, hopefully in the NFL. Or, like, I'll always, back to what we talked about earlier, just promote this league and be involved in any way possible, because I really do think it is the future of getting guys to the NFL or getting them back to the NFL. So I'd always like to have a part in doing something to make this league better, promote it or whatever, because it's done so much for me. But other than that, I mean, my other career is real estate. So I'm licensed in 3 states outside of football. So I'd probably grow that. And by then, who knows, maybe I'll be a real estate mogul or whatever. We'll see.
Well, Vinny, we want to thank you very, very much for being a part of the program. Trevor, nice job of an interview with Vinny, and best of luck as the season gets underway. And I know you don't want to start like last year. I know you want to come out of the gate smoking this year.
That's
so
insane. We had the conference games, and we're the only ones this week that have a conference game. So this is huge, and we're on the road. So it's a must-win.
And one other question, Vinny, that would be it's home and home this year. So what's that going to mean?
It's what? I'm sorry.
Home and home. You play teams on the road as well as home, right?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, we're going to play in a lot of cool places. I mean, everyone's sort of talking about the Battle Hawks right now with the Dome. But I'm sort of excited to see how the Memphis fans come out this year. I think it's going to grow pretty significantly because there's a lot of excitement around the league. But, yeah, it'll be
terrific.
Cool to play in other places. I mean, that's, again, that sort of adds to the best part of playing football. I mean, I love to play in front of the crowd, and I know other guys do too. It's just that's part of it. It's fun. Makes it a lot more fun.
Vinny, best of luck to you, and have a great season in USL, and we'll get together with you again next week or a couple of weeks down the road, see how the team gets out of the gate. Thank you very, very much,
yes,
and say hello to your dad for me.
I will. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
Take care.
You didn't hear me. I wanted to find out if his mom and dad were going to be at the opening game.
Oh, I didn't hear anything about
that. That's the only game they won't be at, actually.
There you go. He's there. That's the only game that they won't be at, right?
Yeah, Easter Sunday is sort of a tough one, but every other game they'll be there.
That's
great. Terrific. Be sure
have
to say hello
season.
For us.
Will
Thank
do.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
I hope you. Great one.
All right. See ya.
All right, let's
there
get to our PGA professional, and Doug Hamilton is always standing in the wings, and we got a lot of golf to talk about, but we got a lot of other things to talk about as well. And I thought it was interesting that as they look forward to the the upcoming draft, and they're talking now about whether the first quarterbacks are going to be 1-2-3-4 or 1-2-3-4-5, how it's going to be, and out there with the Los Angeles to club. Mr. Harbaugh is saying, listen, if they go 1-2-3-4, what I'm getting with the fifth choice with the out in L.A., I'm getting the number one choice, really. I thought that was a good observation.
Well, it's a quarterback-driven league, and I think every year the teams that are at the top obviously didn't have a very good season, and most likely that was because they didn't really have good quarterback play. So I think most pundits across the board are selecting Caleb Williams number one overall. I think Jaden Daniels should likely be number two. But I think after that, you're going to see some jockeying for position, because I think you've got possibility of teams like the Broncos and the Vikings ascending up the order to try to get, you know, their future quarterbacks. I don't know what the front office of the Patriots are thinking at number three. I've heard people say that guy Drake May is probably not ready for the NFL yet. There were questions about his character. I think J.J. McCarthy possibly could be the third overall quarterback selected. Depending, I think the Arizona Cardinals are sitting in the four spot. They're kind of in that catbird seat where, you know, I think they can wheel and deal that pick to somebody who wants one of those quarterbacks.
Right.
I think you've got the Chargers sitting there, who they kind of cleaned house a little bit in the offseason. Austin Eckler's gone. Mike Williams is gone. Can't think of the other one. Keenan Allen, I guess, is the other one, receiver gone. So they shed some payroll, and I think they're probably looking to start all over. I don't exactly know, but, I mean, a good place to start for them would probably be a pass catcher. I think you have the Giants sitting there at six, who have some options. I believe they need a pass catcher. So, you know, to your point, I think you're going to see a handful of quarterbacks go, three, four of them, and then you're going to see a run on wide receivers because there's a bunch of good ones. And then you're obviously going to get into the meat of it, which is your pass rushing guys and then your offensive linemen. So I've heard conflicting reports. I mean, I think that the Ravens have enough needs that at pick number 30, they can address, you know, really any of them. I saw that Jadeveon Clowney signed today with the Panthers, which kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. I liked him. I thought he had a good season this past year with the Ravens. And
right.
I have a hard time believing they signed him to a $20 million contract that the Ravens thought that was outside of their ballpark. And, you know, for him to probably take maybe, what, $3 or $4 million more to go to the Panthers. I know he's from that area, but at the end of the day, the Panthers stink. And, you know, I don't know. I think he's 31, so we're getting into the twilight of his career. I would have thought he wanted to, you know, stay with the Ravens and have a chance to actually win something. But, you know, I guess he got what he thought he was worth.
It's all the dollars.
Roger, you're up.
It's always the dollars. And but you're right. He played at South Carolina, and I think he is on the you know, the twilight of his career. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say that I think the Panthers will be much improved from the acquisitions that they've made, and also you know, they've got a franchise quarterback, they think. So you know, but you got to give them an offensive line. I know Mike, I guess, is not with us tonight. I had a question for him, but I'll just give it to you because you're in that metropolitan D.C., Baltimore area. I guess you heard that Alexandria turned down the bill for the Wizards and the Capitals to move out of D.C.
Yeah.
What was the sports talk temperature about that on radio? You listened to it, I know.
Yeah, there were – I mean, obviously this week there were two main stories that kind of preempted everything. Obviously, being in the – you know, we're growing up, rather, in that Baltimore area. We had the Key Bridge that basically collapsed.
Yes, and, been over it many times. Yeah,
that's unfortunately, I've a few times, and from some of the golf courses I played, you could see it. And so that was kind of the big non-sports story of the week. But then it was all over the news, because most of what I get is going to be D.C. related in terms of news and those sorts of things. I mean, they gloss over the Ravens and the Orioles, and I kind of miss those. I miss WJZ, which was Channel 13, and those Baltimore sports stories. And usually in my car, I listen to 105.7, The Fan, which is the Baltimore-based version. You know, and they talk about a lot of that, which is always slighted towards Orioles, Ravens, and a little bit of Terps. And they'll hit the Caps just a little bit. But, you know, look, Governor Youngkin was all hot to trot about, you know, trying to get that whole deal worked. And Leonsis was pretty excited about that and what that could mean for his, you know, I mean, monumental sports. And that's, this is a whole different offshoot topic, but, you know, I wish Leonsis would buy the damn Nats and just move them to monumental sports, and then we could have a clean break between, you know, the Masson and all the BS that's going back and forth between those two. You know, generally speaking, I'm very biased because I'm an Oriole fan, and I don't care about the Nats, and I never wanted them to be kind of in the DMV anyway. I mean, I think it's good for D.C. to obviously have their team, but those – they should have had their own station. You know, they should have never merged. That should have never happened, in my opinion. But that's, you know, for what that's worth. But there was a big deal about the mayor of D.C. She had all kinds of smiles, and, you know, and I don't know exactly what happened, but I think basically they couldn't get out of their contract anyway, so they just decided to stay. I don't know Exactly. I was making dinner when they were fooling with that on the TV, but I didn't pay that much attention to it other than to know that they're staying in D.C. And she's threw out a whole bunch of money to try to upgrade, you know, the area and the complex and those sorts of things. So.
Well, now you're talking about Chai going down to the Panthers, and unfortunately, coming out of college, he was really the dominant number one choice. Everybody kept saying, he's going to be the best player. He's going to be the best player. And he really ruined himself the first year. The reason he's had all the problems he's had was because he came down with an injury, not being ready to play and starting to play, coming out. He did it to himself.
He absolutely did. I'm curious to see what happens in Seattle with Coach McDonald running the show up there, because I think McDonald was the first person in Jadeveon Clowney's career that actually used him in the capacity in which he should have been. The defensive scheme that he brought was, Jadeveon Clowney actually plays the run very well. He's a great edge defender, which the Ravens love, that they kind of move outwardly and set that edge. But I think he had 9.5 sacks last year, and his presence was felt as a pass rusher. And I think some of the other schemes after his rookie contract in Houston, you know, he kicked around for, you know, a couple different teams, the Seahawks, the Browns, and the Ravens, and I'm probably missing one. But, I don't think he was used correctly. I mean, you know, look at Kyle Van Noy in that scheme last year, had a career year with a bunch of sacks that he had. So it'll be interesting to see. My gut feeling tells me that one of two things will happen with the Ravens, because Eric DaCosta loves draft picks, and I hope he doesn't trade number 30 and get out of the first round and move back into the second, you know, because he wants more picks and value. But to me, the strength of this draft is probably predicated on your offensive linemen. And after, you know, getting rid of Morgan Moses, we lost Kevin Zeitler, and John Simpson, our left guard. So there's 3/5 of that offensive line that need to be overhauled. And I know they have some in-house candidates that they like, but I think at pick 30, you take yourself a nice solid right tackle, because after restructuring Ronnie Stanley's contract, essentially what they're saying is, this is your last year, bud. So whoever they get at right tackle needs to be able to play left tackle, because I'm guaranteeing they're going to probably move there next year. So we'll see exactly what happens, but they do have 8 or 9 picks. When you start looking at a roster, I mean, how many of those 9 selections are actually going to make your team? So let's say 6 of those 9 picks stick. That gives them 3 extra picks to be able to move, you know, upwardly into the draft to package something together to find someone else they like. So it gives him a little bit of flexibility. And I like, you know, what they've done over the course of time. Signing Derrick Henry was a great signing. There's still probably at least one running back, or maybe even 2 short in the running back room. Could probably use a wide receiver. Definitely need some cornerback depth. I was upset they didn't sign Ronald Darby, which I thought was a sneaky signing, you know, last year, but he graded out as a cover corner at like 72.2 by that Pro Football Focus, which is a pretty good number. And I think another one of those like 2-year kind of $10 million contracts that I'm thinking like, okay, well, you know, that would have been some money well spent, and that's not breaking the bank for somebody that gives you some depth there. So I'm curious to see, but you know, the draft I think is where they're going to, you know, really fill the roster.
Roger.
Well, I think you're probably right. But, you know, they've got a good base team anyway. I mean, even if they lose some players and lost Clowney and some others. And, you know, I think the Falcons are going to be the best in the NFC South because they had the great foundation. They needed a quarterback. Now they got a really good quarterback. Yeah. And they've got so much talent on that team. And I never thought that the kid from Miami who's went to Archbishop Wood and Abington High School, the tight end, I never thought that kid was used right. And I think
God, not even close.
No, well, not
guy,
at all.
That guy, the previous head coach, what's it, Arthur Smith or whatever, that guy's a clown.
Yeah, Arthur Smith, yeah.
And Kyle Pitts is a phenomenal athlete who's freakish in his ability. who just never really was an integral part of that offense. You know, I think you're looking at an ascension for Drake London, the wide receiver that's been there a couple years now. I think he's probably, with Kirk Cousins throwing the football, I think he could have a pretty solid season. I mean, Bijan Robinson obviously was a high draft pick who, frankly, I don't believe he was used effectively last year as
no,
he should have been
no, I agree.
As a pass catcher and runner. You know, Kyle Pitts, I mean, they have some good offensive pieces to add to Kirk Cousins who can distribute ball.
And they got a good defense, Doug. They've had a good defense.
Sure. I mean, and that's a very winnable division, you know, for them. So, yeah, I mean, it's let's see what happens. I mean, there's a lot of the untold stories that go in the NFL. And when you look at the Ravens, and to your point, Roger, that, yeah, I mean, they lost some players. And I think, you know, again, Eric DaCosta and the Ravens really love those compensatory picks when they lose players and they wind up, you know, getting compensated on the back end of that. But, you know, losing Mike McDonald as your defensive coordinator, and when you win football games, the rest of the league takes note of that, and they start handpicking, you know, some of your coaches. And, you know, they lost at least three different coaches. McDonald got a head coaching job. The new defensive coordinator in Tennessee was from the Ravens. So there's other than, you know, people that have been spread out. But, you know, we'll see.
Well, just
I mean,
like the Eagles last year. After sure. they were in the Super Bowl, and, you know, they just got cleaned out,
mm-hmm.
You know, of their coaches and the coordinators.
Sure. Absolutely. It happens. I mean, that's monkey see, monkey do. I mean, this is a repeat league, you know, and they, you know, look at those people and say, hey, wow, man, they had a great season. And that was probably the biggest attributable fact to some of the guys that the Ravens have currently lost is, you know, Mike McDonald stuck them in spots to have career years, and they did. And, you know, other teams look at that. And that's the funny part for me is, you know, you look at some of the players that the Ravens have lost and that the other teams have, you know, signed, and their schemes aren't the same. You may not be getting the same player that you thought you were getting because they played, you know, for the Ravens, right? Their production numbers were good, but that may not translate. You know,
well,
and
they win with a better group. That's a problem. They win with a better group.
Well,
when you're in with a better group, your numbers are better.
You
sure,
got it.
But that's
yeah.
That's the problem with free agency. You know, you look at teams like the Commanders, and they had a sizable amount of money to spend in the offseason. But personally, I don't think that they've spent it very wisely whatsoever. And people always talk about, well, they made these additions, but I'm not sure that those additions were. I mean, I think Austin Eckler was a nice signing for them to take a swing at. But, I mean, that guy Gibson was pretty daggone good in that role. So, you know, for the Commanders, I think, you know, number one, they need a quarterback, which they're going to get with their first pick. They have a couple second-rounders, a couple third-rounders. You know, they made some moves, trading some different people. And
they got a lot of room to move.
Sure, absolutely, for sure. They're going to need to get a couple superstars in this draft to be able to compete. That's a tough division.
Doug, let's go because your game was rained out tomorrow night. I didn't know that. Roger told me earlier tonight that they already rained the Baltimore game out tomorrow. But baseball season underway, 101 last year. They had a terrific spring training session. Your thoughts on what's going to happen with the Orioles?
Well, it's pure excitement here, at least for me and the folks probably in that whole Baltimore area that are, you know, building on two really good, you know, winning seasons. Last year having 101 wins and likely the same core grouping and then some key additions. Hopefully they can add to that. You know, I think from my standpoint, I think the Orioles mostly got it right with regard to their off-season additions and spring training notations of players. I think a lot of people here are fairly up in arms. It's pretty mercurial in the area with Jackson Holliday not making the roster. I think that's likely the biggest story is a lot of people think that he's ready to roll and not
real surprise. That was a real surprise.
Well, not just a portion of the team. Well, listen, we all know – it's the same BS, like, you know, the NFL came out and said they're going to be playing football games on Christmas. Okay, well, Christmas this year is on a Wednesday. When's the last time we played a football game on a Wednesday? And they're
last
saying,
Christmas.
Okay, well, I mean, it's dumb stuff that people do that say, okay, well, we want to put the player's safety first. Oh, and oh, by the way, we're going to put a couple games on Christmas, which gives people a shorter week and more injuries. So aside from that, you know, now you're looking at the Baltimore Orioles who say, well, you know, we obviously had a 101 win season last year. We want to make some key additions. We want to give these guys a chance to play. Well, Jackson, you didn't get enough at-bats against tough left-handers, so we're going to put you back in AAA. Okay, well, the BS flag goes up there because what they're saying is, you know, we don't want to start the clock ticking on your arbitration year, and it's a business decision because they don't want to have him lose a year and gain a year of service time, you know, when they can call him up May 10th or whenever that date arises, when their supercomputer tells them that it's fine, you know, that he won't lose that year, and then he can be a part of that team for the rest of the season. So my opinion is, and they went out and they signed this guy, Tony Kemp, who got cut by the A's, and he's made their opening day roster. And I'm like, okay, well, why? Why is he blocking, you know, any of their prospects? Now, I'll tell you this. I watched, or at least not watched because it wasn't televised, but I listened to a lot of the Oriole games, and I watched a lot of the, you know, Major League Baseball app, you know, kind of unfold and looked at their stats and all those certain things. I think
right.
you had some other options. I believe that Coby Mayo is ready for the Major League Baseball as a third baseman, first baseman. I think you could have looked at him. You could have looked at Connor Norby, who plays a good second base. I think you could have looked at Heston Kerstad, Jackson Holliday. I mean, you had some options that should have been that last spot, and I don't like it when they have these cast-off, you know, guys that take that last spot and block from other people using it. I think that's wrong, and I think that stunts the growth of your system.
Roger?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. You know, blocking the advancement, and I think that you know, with the Phillies, we were talking about it earlier. Taiwan Walker is probably on the IL, you know, to start the season, and that may give the opportunity to the kid that I want to see, and they're Mick Abel,
sure,
who was you know, their second pitching prospect. You know, the other kid had Tommy John surgery. He'll be back next year. But,
well, I mean,
you know,
you have a,
yeah, that,
the Phillies,
go
I mean, look, you got Wheeler and Nola. I mean, wow. I mean, that's doesn't every team want to start their lineup with those two guys in terms of the rotation? I mean, those are two really good pitchers. And then even behind them, you know, not to mention, you know, I mean, come on, you got Bryce Harper didn't, you know, he's hopefully going to play a full season. Real Muto is one of the best catchers in baseball. You know, Stott, I mean, Boehm, you know, Kyle Schwarber can roll out of bed tomorrow and hit 45 home runs and chug a beer as he rounds third base. I mean, that's, you know, it's a good nucleus of team.
Yeah, and they've got a number of young prospects coming up too. So, and more pitching. And that's what our friend Howard Eskin said. He doesn't think it's this year. He thinks it's next year.
Mm-hmm.
That when they have all the pieces together with the pitching, that they will have, if everything works out, they'll have a heck of a starting rotation. I mean,
well, it all comes down to injuries. It all comes down to these pitchers going to
yeah.
come up with a sore arm. Is this guy going to get,
well,
you know, spiked? Is something else going to happen?
Strasburg, Don.
Yeah.
Right.
How many people are going to be able to sustain, you know, 182 games? that's the story. Strength of depth of your organization.
Cool.
As you pointed out, Baltimore has great depth in their minor league. Phillies have great depth in their minor league. The Dodgers have great depth in their minor league. The Braves have great depth in their minor league. And they're going to be the teams that are going to dominate the leagues for a couple of years.
Well, Don, I was watching before the show came on. I flipped on the MLB channel, and I think it was between 7 and 8, they were talking about the National League, and then 8 forward, they were talking about the American League. And everybody's so hot to trot on the New York Yankees and how their off season was and how good they are, and they're going to win the American League.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
The Orioles are going to have regression. But you take a look, number one, when's the last time you had Judge and Stanton and all those guys, the guys they key on, play 162 games? Then you look at DJ LeMahieu, Rizzo, Stanton, those guys are probably well past their prime. You know, you look at a Garrett Cole, who's a bona fide ace, who's going to start the season on the 60-day IL because he's got elbow something or other that is mysterious. I mean, he might not have to have Tommy John. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen with him. And they did trade some players to get Juan Soto. And is he going to be able to adjust back, you know, to an American League? I mean, so there's a lot of question marks for me that suggest that they're
They got a third base problem. They got a shortstop problem. There's a guy's a sophomore player who they got a lot of publicity out of last year because he was a local product, but he really wasn't a big-time player. You know, it's not like he came into the league and hit 350 or something. He came into the league and hit 220. If he hit that, you know, then you got a second baseman who they've been trying to trade for 2 years because he can't make the plays at second base. I agree with you 100%. I don't see the Yankees myself being anywhere near the top.
Well, I mean, then the next team they gravitate to is the Blue Jays because of Guerrero and Bichette and, you know, Biggio and Springer and Barsho and all these guys. And I'm like, okay, well, their pitching staff's not, you know, I mean, you know, Kevin Gausman was an Oriole. And, I mean, he, you know, so we're talking about, if you want to talk about regression, I think you're looking at the Blue Jays. You know, the Tampa Bay Rays are always there because they just figure it out. The Red Sox, I think they just stink. So, to me, you know, I think that the Orioles are going to be – and to your point, Don, I think you had previously mentioned this. You know, you have that more balanced schedule where you're not beating the shit out of yourself playing the same teams, the American League East, all the time. It's a little bit more balanced. So, I mean, you know, for those people that say that the Orioles are only going to win 86 games, I mean, come on, I'm not buying that. I'm really not.
No.
I mean, the only reason
I don't need it.
To your point of being injured and stuff like that, but again, Mike Elias has always got his hand on the pulse, and he's not going to be like, okay, well, Craig Kimbrell's 30 whatever he is, and he sucks as my closer, so I'm just going to keep throwing him out there. He'll go get somebody because that's what he's going to do.
Well, Chris Russo picks the Orioles and the Phillies, Doug, to be in the World Series.
Okay, I'll buy that ticket. I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he's just going off page one. He's just going against the Braves. I you know, I can't go against the Braves. I just think they have too many quality. They got too many quality players. Oh, I think the Phillies will be there. We talked to Harry Bell a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I think the Phillies are going to, as you just pointed out, they got a very, very good team. But I don't think they're going to beat the Braves.
Riley had 40-plus home runs. Acuna had 40 home runs. Ozzie Albies, the second baseman, had 30 home runs. Your first baseman, Olsen, had 54. Your catcher, Sean Murphy, had – I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, that team is ridiculously stacked.
That's right.
You know, the Houston Astros. How good are the Houston Astros? I mean,
They're very good.
Bregman, Diaz, Tucker, McCormick, Alonso. I mean, all those guys are legit power threats. So, I mean, this is a big deal for, you know, what's going on here. But I like my chances with Baltimore. They have a good young nucleus. I'm looking for some of these guys to take the next step in Henderson and Santander and Rutschman and all these guys. It's going to be exciting to watch. I'm going to watch or listen to 162 games. I can promise you that.
Is Mountcastle from the D.C. area?
I thought he was from the Eastern Shore, but I can't remember. I don't know, to be quite honest with you. I mean, he platoons with O'Hearn at first base when they go righty-lefty.
Yeah.
You know, I think sight unseen. If
and that's a pretty good platoon they got there, too, Doug.
Yeah, O'Hearn's he played pretty well last year. He got some clutch hits. I like that platoon. You know, they're going to move the infield around to
time, fellas. Yeah. We got to turn it back to our executive producer, Frank Carroll. And Doug, thank you very much once again.
Have a great week, Doug.
You guys.
Take care, Roger.
Take care.
All yours, Frank.
All right. Thanks, son. Hope everybody has a good holiday. Happy Easter to everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. The men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please let them know they're there. Not everybody wearing a uniform is a bad guy. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colgap, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffy Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler,
Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Officer Crispin, Lakeland PD, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeVake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Jeremy Zane, Florida Highway Patrol, Sergeant Chris Fitzgerald, Temple Police Department, Temple University Police Department, and Sergeant Ramon Mendez, Philadelphia Airport Police, Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this point in time. At some time, we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hands. Good night. God bless. Have a great weekend, a great holiday. And please remember, if you drink, don't drive. If you drive, don't drink.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahelahilma, sona shene vorat fet hakuig again ma'ilma. Shemalek ma'ilama,
hang your phone up, Frank.
Proud and gallant.
Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is responding to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.